Welcome to The Deep Dive, where we crack open a stack of sources, research papers, and notes to bring you the most essential insights and surprising facts, all tailored just for you. Today, we're plunging into a question that cuts right to the heart of how we assess corporate resilience. What makes a seemingly traditional industry player not just survive, but, you know, truly thrive and stand out, especially when the broader economy is throwing its toughest challenges their way? We're focusing on a company that, at first glance, might appear to be a straightforward industrial business, but it's concealing, well, a remarkable core of stability. Our mission in this deep dive is to truly unpack the complexities of Rush Enterprises, Inc., trading under the ticker symbol RUSA. They are North America's largest commercial vehicle dealership network. Mm-hmm. And what we want to highlight today is the core investment debate that that really swirls around this company. On one side, you have the highly volatile, cyclical nature of their new and used vehicle sales.
Yeah, the part everyone sees first.
Exactly. And on the other side, you've got the almost astonishing stability and profitability of their aftermarket business. It's this dynamic tension, this push and pull that defines their unique position in the market.
And that tension truly brings us to the central puzzle we're going to dissect together today. Is Rush Enterprises primarily just a volatile, cyclical industrial company, you know, mm-hmm. one that simply mirrors the ups and downs of the trucking industry?
Yeah.
Or does the market fundamentally misunderstand, maybe even undervalue, the sheer quality and surprising stability of its dominant aftermarket profit stream?
Mm.
This isn't just an academic question, right? It's the core differentiator in how you should perceive and analyze this business. And we're going to use our sources to really try and unearth that answer for you. Hashtag Aronste, hashtag Canny FA.
All right, let's peel back the layers here. To really grasp what Rush Enterprises is all about, you have to move beyond the simple notion of them being just a truck dealership.
Mm-hmm.
Our sources consistently describe them as a total solutions provider.
Right, and that phrase pops up again and again.
It does, and it's not just marketing jargon. It really encapsulates a deeply integrated business model. So what exactly does that comprehensive approach entail for their customers?
Well, it certainly starts with the foundational elements, you know, the initial sale of both new and used heavy-duty, medium-duty, and even light-duty trucks and buses. They represent a wide spectrum of commercial vehicles. But the sale itself is just the beginning of the relationship, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's the entry point.
What truly makes them a total solutions provider is the robust, comprehensive suite of aftermarket services they provide throughout the entire life cycle of that vehicle. This includes offering all makes parts, and that's key, parts for virtually any commercial truck brand, not just the ones they sell new.
Which is huge for mixed fleets.
Exactly. Along with extensive preventative maintenance, complex diagnostics, and full-scale collision repair. Imagine you're a fleet manager, right?
Yep.
And one of your trucks breaks down hundreds of miles from your home base.
Nightmare scenario. Total nightmare. Knowing you can call one number, use one system, and get consistent quality service for any of your trucks, regardless of brand or where they are, that's an immense value proposition. It dramatically simplifies the operational complexities for their customers.
It's a massive headache off their plate.
Definitely. But their services extend even further, rounding out that total solutions philosophy.
Mm.
The sources highlight a whole range of ancillary services that cement this one-stop shop appeal. This includes offering vehicle leasing and rental services, which are, you know, absolutely crucial for fleets needing flexibility or temporary capacity.
Surge capacity breakdowns.
Yes. They've also integrated financing and insurance products, making the entire acquisition and operational process pretty seamless. And beyond the traditional stuff, they're deeply involved in emerging areas like alternative fuel system installations. Think natural gas, electric, and hydrogen.
Which is becoming increasingly important.
Very. And they're at the forefront of advanced vehicle technology solutions. This integrated approach isn't some new strategy for them. It's really baked into their DNA. Rush Enterprises was founded way back in 1965. Started as a single GMC truck dealership in Houston, Texas.
Humble beginnings.
Very humble. From that start, it's grown through decades of, well, shrewd strategic acquisitions and organic expansion to become, definitively, the largest commercial vehicle dealer group across North America. By the end of 2024, they boasted impressive annual revenues of $7.8 billion and a workforce of nearly 8,000 employees. It's a truly massive, strategically built operation.
And what's truly fascinating here is how that deeply integrated model directly translates into their formidable competitive advantage. The significance of their geographic footprint and the sheer scale of their network. what simply cannot be overstated. Our sources repeatedly identify this expansive network as the absolute cornerstone of their competitive edge.
Cornerstone, yeah, that makes sense.
We're talking about more than 200 locations strategically positioned across both the U.S. and Canada.
200 plus. That's a lot of ground covered.
It really is. Now, why is this so profoundly crucial? Imagine you're managing a large national fleet, maybe with thousands of trucks, crisscrossing the continent daily.
Okay.
Your trucks are essential tools for your business, right? Every minute they're off the road due to a breakdown or maintenance, you're losing money, big money.
Right. Uptime is everything.
Everything. So if one of your trucks has an issue in, say, Nebraska, and another is down in Ontario, you need immediate, consistent, high-quality support, parts, and service, regardless of the precise location. A fragmented network of small independent dealerships simply cannot provide that consistent standard of service, nor can they track your fleet's service history across multiple locations seamlessly.
That lack of consistency would be a killer.
Exactly. Rush's expansive network provides that critical, unified, nationwide service infrastructure. It ensures that those large fleet customers, who prioritize uptime and efficiency above almost everything else, have reliable support at virtually every point on their routes. This consistency builds immense loyalty over time.
So it's not just about having locations, it's about the network effect of those locations for the customer.
Precisely. And they are certainly not resting on their laurels. The company's relentless in expanding and optimizing this network. Consider 2024 alone. They strategically added two full-service Peterbilt dealerships in Nebraska, specifically targeting the crucial Interstate 80 freight corridor. That's a major artery for goods movement across the U.S.
Prime real estate for trucking.
Absolutely. They also opened new parts and mobile service locations in high-demand areas like California and Texas, further extending their immediate reach for urgent repairs.
Oh.
Furthermore, they enhanced their vehicle modification capabilities with a new, specialized facility in Arizona.
Okay.
This isn't random expansion. Our sources call it a disciplined approach to filling existing geographic gaps and enhancing their service offerings in key high-demand markets. This continuous strategic growth reinforces their unique ability to serve customers consistently across the entire continent, a capability few, if any, competitors can match.
Right, always strengthening that core advantage. But let's dig into a pivotal aspect that truly solidifies their market position, their key OEM relationships. Rush doesn't just work with one truck brand. They boast a powerful portfolio of premier commercial vehicle brands. The sources highlight their foundational relationships with PACCAR, specifically for its Peterbilt truck line, and Navistar, which covers the International Brand Trucks and IC bus lines.
Peterbilt and International, the big two for them.
Exactly. These are not just partnerships. They are truly referred to as their dual anchors. And each of these relationships holds distinct strategic importance, and they complement each other beautifully, don't they?
They really do. It's a smart pairing.
Peterbilt, for instance, is a market leader, renowned for its superior quality, exceptional resale value, and strong brand perception. It naturally attracts premium customers and owner-operators.
The high-end market.
Right, which often translates to higher gross profit margins for Rush. It's seen in many ways as the aspirational top-tier brand in the heavy-duty segment. On the other hand, their relationship with International was significantly expanded and deepened through that landmark acquisition of Summit Truck Group in late 2021. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. That was a huge deal. Reshaped their footprint.
Totally. This strategic move provided Rush with access to a different, broader segment of the market, including some of the nation's largest fleets that specifically operate International trucks. This acquisition didn't just add dealerships, it diversified their customer base and strengthened their ability to serve a wider array of trucking needs, perfectly complementing their Peterbilt offerings.
So Peterbilt for premium, International for broader reach and big fleets. Makes sense.
And it's not just the heavy-duty giants. Rush also maintains important medium-duty partnerships with brands like Ford, Hino, and Isuzu. This diversified multi-brand strategy means they are not putting all their eggs in one basket, which is especially smart in an industry known for its brand loyalties and shifting market dynamics.
And that multi-brand strategy is absolutely critical to their long-term viability. If you zoom out for a moment, it offers significant diversification for Rush Enterprises. By not being solely dependent on any single OEM, they mitigate risk from brand-specific market shifts, manufacturing issues, or even changes in OEM strategy down the line.
Smart hedge.
It's a very smart move in an industry where brand preferences and market cycles can and do shift. This strategy also enabled them to cater to an incredibly wide range of vocations, applications, and customer preferences. Whether a customer needs a premium, aerodynamic truck for long-haul routes, a robust, high-volume fleet vehicle for regional distribution, or a specialized medium-duty solution for local deliveries, Rush has a brand and a model to fit that precise need.
They cover the bases.
They really do. It dramatically broadens their addressable market and reinforces their identity as a comprehensive solutions provider for the entire commercial vehicle ecosystem. It's about being prepared for whatever the market demands.
So we've talked about their comprehensive model, the scale, the strategic OEM relationships, but what does all of this actually mean for their bottom line, for their profitability? This is where the concept of the aftermarket engine comes into play. Our sources highlight this as the undisputed, most consistent driver of profitability for Rush Enterprises.
The real moneymaker.
Exactly. And what's fascinating is the stark contrast between how revenue breaks down versus how gross profit is generated. For the full fiscal year 2024, new and used commercial vehicle sales constituted the largest portion of their top-line revenue, contributing a substantial $4.89 billion. In comparison, their aftermarket products and services, that's parts, service, and collision repair, contributed $2.52 billion out of their $7.8 billion in total revenue. So purely on a revenue basis, vehicle sales are clearly the larger segment.
Looks bigger on the surface.
Right. But here's where the narrative shifts dramatically. When you look at the gross profit contribution, the high-margin aftermarket business completely clips the script. It accounted for approximately 60.4% of the company's total gross profit in 2024.
Over 60% from the smaller revenue piece.
Precisely. To give you the exact numbers, that's $925.0 million in aftermarket gross profit, generated from a total gross profit of $1,531.4 million. And this dynamic actually became even more pronounced during the challenging market downturn of 2025. In the second quarter of 2025, the aftermarket segment generated an even higher 63.0% of total gross profit.
Wow, so it gets stronger relative to sales in tough times.
Exactly. What this unequivocally tells us is where the real, consistent, and resilient profitability lies for Rush. It's not in the flashy cyclical sales of new trucks.
That truly raises a critical question, though.
Yeah.
How does that stability really work? Especially when vehicle sales are so volatile, swinging up and down. Our sources explain it beautifully through what they call the razor and blade analogy.
Ah, the classic model.
The classic model, applied here perfectly. Think about it this way. The razor in this business is the sale of new and used trucks. This is a highly competitive, typically low-margin business, and as we've discussed, it's notoriously cyclical. Demand goes up and down with the broader economy, much like trying to sell razor handles.
Right. Necessary, but not the main profit driver.
Exactly. It's necessary to get customers into the Rush ecosystem, but it's not where the consistent high-margin money is made. The blades, on the other hand, are the high-margin recurring parts and services.
Got it.
Every single truck that Rush sells, or, frankly, any commercial vehicle on the road, adds to the total population of trucks in operation what the industry affectionately calls the park.
The park, right. The installed base.
The installed base. And here's the key. Yep. Every truck in that park needs ongoing maintenance, repair, and eventually replacement parts, regardless of whether a new truck is being purchased that year. This creates a consistently in-demand, high-margin revenue stream that flows robustly, even when new truck sales are, you know, in the doldrums.
Just like an annuity stream, almost.
Oh, very much so. This is their profit sanctuary concept, and it comes with a fantastic counter-cyclical element. During economic downturns, when new truck sales decline because fleets are hesitant to invest in new capital, fleet owners inevitably extend the operational life of their existing vehicles.
Right.
They hold on to them longer.
Makes sense. Can't afford new ones.
Exactly. And what happens when you keep an older truck on the road longer? It inherently requires more frequent service, more intensive maintenance, and crucially, more replacement parts.
Ah, so the downturn actually boosts service demand.
Paradoxically, yes. A downturn in new vehicle sales can increase the intensity of demand for Rush's service and parts business. This stability, coupled with the high absorption ratio we're about to discuss, provides an incredibly resilient floor for Rush's overall profitability, even when the new truck market is in the gutter. It's a brilliant setup.
Okay, that counter-cyclical element is fascinating. And you mentioned a specific metric that really quantifies this, the absorption ratio. This sounds like a real aha moment for understanding their resilience. For those listening who might not be familiar, could you explain what the absorption ratio is?
Sure. It's a key industry metric, really critical for dealerships. It precisely measures the extent to which a dealership's aftermarket gross profit, so again, profit from parts, service, and collision repair covers its fixed overhead costs.
Fixed costs like rent, utilities, core salary.
It's exactly. A cost you have to pay regardless of sales volume. Essentially, it tells you, is our stable, profitable aftermarket business covering our basic operating expenses?
Okay. So what do Rush's numbers reveal about this? You said they were robust.
Incredibly robust. They consistently boast ratios well over 100%. Get this, 132.2% in 2024.
Wow.
And it even climbed to 135.5% in the second quarter of 2025, right in the teeth of that significant market downturn we talked about.
So even in a downturn, their aftermarket profits covered all their fixed costs plus another 35% on top.
Precisely. The significance of a ratio exceeding 100% cannot be overstated. It means that Rush's stable, high-margin aftermarket business alone generates enough gross profit to cover all of the company's fixed operating expenses.
Okay, that really sinks in now.
Think about that for a moment. This makes the more volatile vehicle sales business the razor, in our analogy, effectively purely accretive to the bottom line.
Meaning any profit from selling trucks is just gravy.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Bonus profit piling on top of their already covered fixed costs.
Yeah.
This is why Rush Enterprises is fundamentally more durable and financially resilient than a pure-play truck manufacturer or, say, a dealership group that lacks such a dominant and profitable aftermarket focus.
Right.
It's not just their secret weapon. It's the very foundation of their financial stability,
yeah,
allowing them to weather severe market contractions that would cripple less diversified companies. It's the bedrock.
Okay, let's shift gears now and consider the broader industry landscape. The commercial vehicle market is, well, notoriously cyclical. Everyone knows that. And our sources tell us it's currently entrenched in a deep and prolonged downturn.
Yeah, it's been a tough couple of years for trucking.
Definitely. This market is directly, almost instantly correlated to freight tonnage, shipping rates, and just the overall health of the macroeconomy. When the economy falters, freight volume drops, shipping rates plummet.
And suddenly nobody needs new trucks.
Exactly. There's a cascading effect that significantly reduces the need for new trucks. Rush's own management has characterized the current situation vividly, referring to it as a freight recession that has persisted for more than 2 years.
2 years is a long time in this industry.
It is. This environment, marked by severely depressed freight rates and a significant excess of carrier capacity, has profoundly weakened demand for new trucks, particularly from the large over-the-road fleets. And those large fleets represent Rush's most significant customer segment for new vehicle sales, making the impact acutely felt.
So their core new truck buyers are hurting.
They are. The sources paint a clear, sobering picture of the industry struggles. According to ACT Research, U.S. Class 8 retail sales were down 0.6% year over year in the second quarter of 2025.
Okay, slightly down.
But they are forecasted to decline by an even sharper 10.5% for the full year 2025.
Ouch. Double-digit decline predicted.
Yeah. And net new orders for Class 8 trucks have been hovering near multi-year lows through mid-2025, prompting all major OEMs, Peterbilt, International, everyone, to implement significant production cuts. This widespread market softness is directly reflected in Rush's own performance. Their new Class 8 unit sales declined 20.3% year over year in Q2 2025.
20%? That's a big drop.
It is, although it's worth noting that this was against a very difficult comparison from the prior year that included several large fleet deliveries. Still, it's undeniably a tough road out there for the industry as a whole.
Right. But despite these significant headwinds and what is clearly a challenging market, Rush has demonstrated an impressive ability to not only maintain, but actually strengthen its market position in some ways. In the second quarter of 2025, the company managed to capture a respectable 5.4% of the new U.S. Class 8 truck market. That's a strong share given the overall market contraction.
Holding their own in the heavy-duty space, then.
Pretty much. But what's equally, if not more, important is their robust strength in the medium-duty segment, which encompasses Class 4 to 7 trucks.
Ah, the smaller commercial trucks. Why is that distinction critical?
Well, medium-duty trucks tend to exhibit far less volatility than their heavy-duty Class 8 counterparts. Their demand is more closely tied to regional economic activity, local deliveries, and vocational uses. Think delivery vans, utility trucks, school buses, municipal vehicles, things like that.
Okay, less tied to the big national freight cycles.
It's exactly. Much less sensitive to national economic swings and global trade. And here's where Rush truly showcased its strategic advantage and outperformance in Q2 2025. Their medium-duty unit sales actually increased by 1.0% year over year.
Increased, while the overall market was weak.
Yes. This is remarkable when you consider that the total U.S. medium-duty market itself contracted by 8.4% during the same period.
Wow, so they significantly outperformed the market there.
Hugely outperformed. This allowed Rush to capture a significant 6.2% of that market, demonstrating impressive market share gains in a declining environment. This outperformance really highlights the strategic benefit of Rush's diversified product portfolio across different truck classes. It provides a crucial cushion and an additional layer of resilience when the heavy-duty market is suffering.
Diversification paying off. Now, here's where the future dynamics get particularly intriguing and potentially disruptive. The looming regulatory gauntlet of EPA 2027 emission standards. What exactly are these, and how are they currently creating such profound uncertainty and market distortion across the entire commercial vehicle industry?
Yeah, EPA 2027 is the elephant in the room for the whole industry right now.
It seems like it. Well, our sources detail the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's GHG Phase 3 standards. These are slated to take full effect in 2027, and they are expected to mandate incredibly complex new engine and after-treatment technologies for heavy-duty vehicles. The bottom line is these new trucks will come with a substantially higher upfront cost, potentially tens of thousands of dollars more per vehicle.
Big price jump. And new, maybe unproven tech.
Right. And this isn't just a federal push. It's compounded by aggressive state-level mandates from bodies like the California Air Resources Board, or CARB, adding yet another layer of complexity and potential cost. This looming deadline is essentially distorting normal fleet replacement cycles, creating a highly unusual market environment.
It really is. And this begs an important question. How exactly do fleets respond to this kind of regulatory pressure, especially when it coincides with the freight recession? We're seeing what the industry refers to as the pre-buy phenomenon.
The pre-buy. Okay, tell us about that.
Well, the industry is essentially caught between two incredibly powerful and opposing forces right now. On one side, you still have the persistent freight recession, which causes fleets to delay purchases due to weak profitability, tight credit, and existing excess capacity. They don't want to buy trucks.
Right, the brakes are on.
But on the other side, you have the powerful, undeniable pull of the looming 2027 emission standards. These new regulations create a compelling incentive for fleets to accelerate the replacement of their older trucks in 2025 and 2026.
Accelerate? Why?
To acquire current generation technology, which they are familiar with, which has proven reliability, and crucially, which is less expensive before the new, potentially more expensive, and possibly less proven, 2027 compliant models become mandatory. They want to lock in the known quantity before the rules change.
Beat the deadline and the price increase. Makes sense.
Exactly. This dynamic sets the stage for what could be a profound whiplash effect across the industry. Once the freight market shows any discernible signs of stabilization, the combination of pent-up replacement demand from the recession and this powerful regulatory pre-buy incentive could trigger a massive and rapid spike in truck orders.
So a potential boom before 2027.
Could be. This could lead to a period of record sales and profits for companies like Rush in the 12 to 18 months preceding the 2027 deadline, as everyone rushes to get current models. However, the flip side is that it also creates the significant risk of a subsequent demand cliff in 2027 and 2028, as a substantial portion of future demand will have been pulled forward into those earlier years.
Boom, and then bust. Whiplash indeed.
Exactly. This dramatically increases the medium-term volatility specifically for Rush's vehicle sales segment. But here's the crucial insight. While this volatility is a challenge for the industry as a whole, it can become a strategic tailwind for the largest, most resilient players like Rush. Well, smaller, less capitalized dealerships might struggle with managing inventory, cash flow, and technician training amid such a chaotic pre-buy surge and subsequent cliff. Rush's scale, financial strength, and integrated aftermarket business allow them to absorb this volatility much better. They can potentially gain market share by being the consistent, reliable partner in a highly unpredictable market.
Interesting. So the disruption could actually strengthen their position relative to weaker competitors.
Potentially, yes. It's a prime example of how industry headwinds can sometimes become selective tailwinds for the strongest players. Hashtag tag 5E. Unpacking the competitive moats of Rush Enterprises.
That's a fascinating look at the market dynamics. Now let's talk specifically about competitive advantage. Our sources clearly identify several powerful moats that effectively protect Rush, making them incredibly difficult to compete with. What exactly makes them so formidable in this space?
Yeah, they have some really solid defenses.
First, there's their sheer network scale. We touched on this, but it bears repeating. With over 200 strategically located dealerships and service centers across the U.S. and Canada.
That footprint is just massive.
It is. They provide a level of ubiquitous service and support for large national fleets that smaller regional competitors simply cannot replicate. Think about it from a fleet manager's perspective again. If you have trucks operating coast to coast, the ability to get consistent quality service, parts, and diagnostics from a single trusted provider, no matter where your truck breaks down, is paramount for minimizing downtime.
It solves huge logistical nightmares.
Right. This capability keeps their valuable assets on the road, earning money. Second, their integrated business model acts as a powerful, almost unbreakable moat. By truly being a one-stop shop for everything, from the sale of new and used vehicles to all makes parts, comprehensive service, leasing, financing Rush creates incredibly sticky, long-term customer relationships.
Once you're in their system, it's hard to leave.
Exactly. It becomes economically and operationally inconvenient to go elsewhere. This comprehensive approach allows Rush to capture the full lifecycle value of a commercial vehicle. They're not just selling a truck, they're providing an entire ecosystem of support.
Locking the customer in a good way.
Makes customers incentivized to stay within the Rush family for all their needs, from acquisition to eventual trade-in. And third, but perhaps most importantly, is their aftermarket dominance.
This is the core economic moat, I agree.
Their strategic focus on all makes parts and service, supported by a vast, geographically dispersed inventory and a large, highly trained technician workforce, is not only inherently highly profitable, but also incredibly resilient to economic cycles, as we saw with the absorption ratio. This recurring revenue stream is a critical defense against market downturns, and it throws off consistent cash flow year after year.
So scale, integration, and aftermarket focus, those are the big three.
They combine to make it incredibly difficult for new entrants or even smaller existing players to challenge Rush's dominant market position.
And that leads directly to their technological integration, which I'd argue is another powerful and increasingly important moat. The company's proprietary RushCare digital platform isn't just some nice-to-have customer portal. It's a sophisticated, integrated ecosystem specifically designed for aftermarket support that significantly enhances customer loyalty and, crucially, creates very high switching costs.
High switching costs. Okay, tell me more about RushCare.
It's really a game changer for customer retention. Let's break down the two key components. First, there's Parts Connect. This is described as a comprehensive e-commerce platform. It allows customers to search a massive catalog of all makes parts, meaning they can find parts for any brand of truck, even if Rush isn't the primary dealer for that brand.
So truly all makes online.
Yes. And crucially, it provides real-time inventory visibility across Rush's entire national network, allowing for 247 ordering for pickup or immediate delivery. This initiative is part of a broader platform modernization aimed at enhancing the customer experience and moving towards a more efficient direct-to-consumer model for parts sales.
So a fleet manager in the middle of the night needing a specific part for a critical breakdown.
Exactly. Parts Connect lets them find it, confirm availability, and order it instantly from the closest Rush location. That's immense operational value right there.
It's huge. Okay, what's the other part? Service Connect?
Right, Service Connect. This is a sophisticated online service communication system that gives customers an unprecedented 360-degree real-time view of the repair process. It's integrated with major OEM and third-party telematics platforms like Peterbilt SmartLink, Cummins Engine Diagnostics, and popular fleet management systems like Geotab.
So it pulls data from the truck itself.
Yes, and other systems. This means it functions as a single portal for customers to track service history, manage maintenance schedules, approve repairs digitally, and even communicate directly with technicians and service advisors.
Eliminates the phone tag and uncertainty.
Completely. Imagine the frustration of not knowing the status of a truck in the shop. Service Connect eliminates that uncertainty, providing transparency and control that fleet managers desperately need to minimize costly downtime.
That sounds incredibly valuable.
It is. And what's truly fascinating here is how RushCare generates what we can call a digital moat, driven by a powerful data flywheel.
A data flywheel? Explain that.
By integrating with vehicle telematics systems, Rush gains access to real-time, actionable data on vehicle health, things like critical fault codes, engine hours, component wear, even predictive indicators of potential failures. This allows them to shift from a reactive repair model, fixing things after they break, to a proactive and even predictive maintenance model. They can alert customers to potential issues before they result in costly, unscheduled downtime.
Preventing breakdowns before they happen.
That's the goal. And as more customers utilize the RushCare platform across their vast network, Rush aggregates a proprietary, continually growing data set on component failure rates, average repair times, overall vehicle performance across diverse makes, models, operating conditions, you name it. This data, in turn, fuels that powerful flywheel. Better data enables more efficient diagnostics, faster repairs, and more proactive service.
Which attracts more customers.
Exactly. Which naturally attracts even more customers, who then generate even more data. This virtuous cycle creates extremely high switching costs for customers. It becomes very difficult for them to leave once embedded in the RushCare ecosystem.
Wow.
And it provides Rush with a truly data-driven competitive advantage that smaller, less technologically advanced competitors simply cannot replicate. It's smart scale, meeting cutting-edge tech.
Okay, those moats sound pretty deep. Given these formidable advantages, it's worth taking a moment to consider. What are the actual barriers to entry in this industry? Why can't others just copy this?
Good question. Our sources pinpoint several truly significant ones. High walls.
Like what? First, there's the sheer capital intensity. Building a network of full-service commercial vehicle dealerships isn't just expensive. It requires an enormous upfront investment of capital. We're talking massive amounts of money for acquiring prime real estate along key freight corridors, constructing state-of-the-art service bays equipped with specialized diagnostic tools for increasingly complex vehicles.
Millions and millions per location.
Right. And of course, maintaining extensive and diverse parts and vehicle inventories. This isn't a business you can just start up on a shoestring budget. It requires deep pockets and a long-term vision.
Absolutely not a startup game.
Second, and critically, are the OEM franchise agreements. Gaining franchise rights from premier manufacturers like PACCAR, the parent company of Peterbilt or Navistar, is exceptionally difficult.
They don't just hand those out.
Not at all. These are highly coveted, exclusive territories, and OEMs only grant them to a select few. Well-capitalized operators with a proven, long track record of sales performance, impeccable service quality, and a deep commitment to brand stewardship. It's not an open market. You need to be invited into this exclusive club. And the sources specifically highlight that these agreements contain change of control provisions.
Yes, the ownership clause.
Right. To put it simply, this means that if the Rush family's aggregate voting power, their ownership stake, were to fall below a certain threshold, it could trigger a clause allowing the OEM to terminate the franchise agreement.
Which would be catastrophic.
It would. This is a critical safeguard for the OEMs to ensure their brand is managed by a stable, committed partner, but it also represents a specific governance risk for investors, underlining the importance of the Rush family's continued involvement. And third, you need technical expertise. Mm. The increasing complexity of modern commercial vehicles, advanced electronics, intricate emission systems, alternative fuel powertrains like electric and hydrogen demands a highly skilled and continuously trained technician workforce.
Finding those technicians is tough.
Very tough. There's a severe shortage of these specialized technicians, and recruiting, training, and retaining this talent is a major operational challenge in itself, requiring significant ongoing investment. This talent bottleneck represents a significant barrier for any new entrant trying to compete.
So massive capital, exclusive OEM deals, and hard-to-find talent. Yeah, those are high walls.
Definitely. These aren't just hurdles. They're high, expensive, and specialized walls.
So if we place this in broader context, it's incredibly helpful to understand how Rush stacks up against its most direct, publicly traded competitor, Penske Automotive Group, or PAG, particularly their commercial truck subsidiary, Premier Truck Group.
Right. Penske? How do they compare?
While both are major players, their scale and focus differ meaningfully. When we look at scale and revenue, Rush is the undeniably larger entity, specifically within the commercial vehicle space. In 2024, Rush Enterprises generated $7.8 billion in revenue. That significantly dwarfs the $3.5 billion from PAG's retail commercial truck segment.
More than double the size in commercial trucks.
Yeah. Furthermore, Rush operates a substantially larger network, boasting over 200 locations compared to Premier Truck Group's 45. This scale difference isn't just about size, it's about network density, the ability to serve national fleets more comprehensively, and enhance purchasing power for parts and inventory. It reinforces Rush's competitive moat.
Okay, bigger network, bigger revenue in this specific space. What about brands?
Another key strategic difference lies in their brand representation. Rush's heavy-duty business is anchored by Peterbilt and International, giving it that strong, diversified presence. In contrast, Penske's Premier Truck Group is primarily the largest dealer for Daimler's Freightliner brand.
So they focus mainly on Freightliner, while Rush has the PACCAR Navistar combo.
Exactly. So while both are major players, they serve different, albeit overlapping, segments of the market through distinct OEM partnerships. It's not a direct head-to-head battle for the same customer with the same brand across the board.
Got it. Any other competitors worth mentioning?
Well, we can briefly mention other less direct competitors like Lithia Motors and AutoNation. While they do have commercial and fleet operations, these are typically focused more on light and medium-duty vehicles. They don't represent a core part of their business strategy in the same way heavy-duty trucks do for Rush.
More focused on cars and light trucks.
Right. However, their foray into light and medium-duty commercial sales, often leveraging their established passenger car networks, highlights a subtle but growing trend. They might not compete head-on in heavy duty, but they are increasingly vying for the regional delivery and vocational vehicle market.
Which is a key growth area for Rush, too.
Exactly. So Rush needs to stay agile and continually differentiate, even in segments where they currently dominate. The lines can sometimes blur at the lighter end of the spectrum, but overall, Rush remains a somewhat unique pure play within the publicly traded heavy-duty dealership space.
That's a comprehensive overview of their competitive standing. Let's now look at the financial performance over the long term. What does a, say, 10-year view tell us about Rush's growth trajectory and, crucially, how it manages the inherent cyclicality of its core market?
Yeah, looking back really shows their resilience.
The sources clearly illustrate a compelling trajectory of consistent growth. The company has successfully navigated multiple, often severe, industry cycles, strategically expanding its revenue base from $5.0 billion back in 2015 to an impressive $7.8 billion in 2024.
That's significant top-line growth in a very tough industry.
Definitely. However, while revenue has grown steadily, their net income has shown greater volatility, which, you know, directly reflects those inherent swings in the new truck market. We saw a trough in net income of $66.1 million in 2015, which then surged to a peak of $391.4 million in 2022 during that post-pandemic boom in demand.
Huge peak.
Before moderating back down to $305.0 million in 2024 as the freight recession really took hold.
So the bottom line bounces around more, as you'd expect.
Yeah, right. But this historical journey beautifully demonstrates management's dual ability, not only to grow the business substantially over the long term through strategic expansion and acquisitions, but also to skillfully manage its profitability through periods of significant market fluctuation. They've proven they can navigate the ups and downs.
And margin analysis is absolutely key here, especially when looking at how Rush consistently manages to maintain profitability through these pronounced cycles. What's strikingly clear is how the high-margin aftermarket business fundamentally stabilizes their overall profitability. If you scrutinize the company's financials, their overall gross margin has remained remarkably consistent.
Consistent gross margin, yeah. Even with sales bouncing.
Yeah, generally staying within the tight range of 18% to 21%. This consistency, despite massive swings in new truck sales volumes and pricing, directly illustrates the protective power of their aftermarket segment. It acts as a counterweight.
The ballast in the ship.
Exactly. While their operating margin does naturally show the impact of the cycle expanding robustly during upswings and contracting during downturns, as the low-margin new vehicle sales fluctuate, that absorption ratio, which we emphasized earlier, remains the single most important driver. It provides that consistent base of gross profit from the aftermarket business that covers virtually all fixed costs, ensuring the company remains profitable even during severe market contractions.
So even if operating margins dip, the gross margin holds up better because of aftermarket.
Precisely. So while you might see their reported earnings fluctuate year to year, that underlying stability in gross margin, profoundly underpinned by the aftermarket, is what truly differentiates Rush's financial profile from a pure-play cyclical manufacturer. It gives them a durability that many other industrial companies simply don't possess.
Okay, that makes sense. Shifting now to their future growth opportunities, it's abundantly clear from our sources that strategic acquisitions are a core pillar of Rush's pathway forward.
M&A is definitely in their playbook.
They possess a long and successful track record in what is still a highly fragmented commercial vehicle dealership market. there are still lots of smaller players out there.
Lots of potential targets.
Right. This isn't just a theoretical strategy. It's a proven, repeatable blueprint for growth. A prime example of this disciplined approach is their 2021 acquisition of Summit Truck Group.
We mentioned that one earlier, the big one.
The big one. It wasn't just another bolt-on. It was the largest acquisition in the company's history, and it was strategically profound. It substantially expanded Rush's international dealership footprint, adding key territories in states like Arkansas, Kansas, Missouri, and Tennessee.
Filling in the map significantly.
Exactly. This move was about more than simply adding locations. It significantly strengthened their national service capabilities, making their existing network even more comprehensive and, critically, more appealing to the largest national fleets who demand seamless support. It's a testament to their calculated approach to inorganic growth.
Buying smart, not just buying big.
Yeah.
But it's not just about M&A, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're also focused on organic growth.
Absolutely. Rush's management is intensely focused on organic aftermarket and recurring revenue growth. They are making targeted, significant investments in several areas to drive this. This includes actively pushing for more planned maintenance contracts with customers.
Locking in that service revenue.
Right, providing predictable, recurring revenue streams. They're also expanding their express services for rapid turnaround times on common repairs, recognizing that speed is critical for fleet uptime. And crucially, they are significantly building out the company's mobile service fleet.
Mobile service.
Yeah.
Taking the repair shop to the customer. That sounds important.
It is. The expansion of mobile service in particular is a really smart play. Why? Because it dramatically increases their service capacity and offers unparalleled customer convenience without the massive capital investment required for new physical facilities.
Ah, capacity without CapEx. Nice.
Exactly. Imagine technicians dispatched directly to a customer's location, sometimes even embedding themselves within large fleet facilities for continuous support.
Deepening those relationships.
Totally. This not only deepens relationships with key national accounts, but also provides unparalleled flexibility and convenience. This laser focus on service innovation directly contributes to that stable, high-margin aftermarket engine, ensuring its continued growth and resilience long into the future. It's about meeting the customer where they are.
Makes sense. And looking further down the road, alternative fuel vehicles, or AFVs, present a truly unique opportunity for Rush, don't they?
They really do. The sources indicate how they are strategically positioning themselves as a leader, not just in the sales of these new natural gas, electric, and hydrogen fuel cell systems, but critically in their complex service and support.
The service part is key for new tech.
Absolutely. They've been making substantial investments in dedicated service bays specifically designed for these complex new technologies and, perhaps even more importantly, in specialized technician training to handle the intricacies of electric powertrains and hydrogen fuel cells.
Investing ahead of the curve. But this immediately raises a fascinating question. Why is this such a profound competitive advantage for Rush?
Good point. How does it create an advantage?
Well, it circles back to those high barriers to entry we discussed earlier. Many smaller independent dealers will simply lack the significant capital required, the specialized equipment, and most critically, the highly specialized expertise to properly service these new, complex, alternative fuel vehicles. As the industry inevitably transitions towards electrification and other alternative powertrains, which it undoubtedly will over time, Rush is positioning itself to be an indispensable partner for fleets adopting these cutting-edge technologies.
So they become the go-to guys for servicing the new stuff.
Exactly. They are, in essence, extending their proven razor and blade model into the future of trucking, ensuring they capture the long-term, high-margin aftermarket revenue from these next-generation vehicles. It's a proactive move to future-proof their core profitability.
Smart long-term thinking. Okay, let's talk about how they manage their money. What's their disciplined approach to capital allocation and, importantly, returning value to shareholders?
Always important to follow the money.
Our sources paint a very clear picture of a consistent track record here. Rush initiated its first ever quarterly cash dividend back in 2018, a significant milestone, and has consistently increased it since then. This signals strong confidence in its long-term cash flow generation and the sustainability of its business model. For instance, in Q2 2025, the dividend was robustly increased by 5.6% to 19 cents per share.
Consistent dividend growth. shareholders like that?
They do. In addition to dividends, the company actively uses share repurchase programs as a key tool for capital return. Management has demonstrated a keen willingness to be opportunistic.
Buying back stock when it's cheap.
Exactly. Significantly increasing buyback activity during periods of market weakness, strategically acquiring shares when they believe the stock is undervalued by the market. In Q4 2024, a new $150 million repurchase program was authorized. Then, that was impressively increased by $50 million to a total of $200 million in May 2025, right as the market continued to be soft.
Upping the ante on buyback.
And they acted decisively on this, repurchasing a substantial $83.9 million worth of common stock in Q2 2025 alone.
Wow, nearly $84 million in one quarter. That's aggressive.
It is. This aggressive buyback activity truly underscores management's conviction in the company's intrinsic value, putting their money where their mouth is and directly benefiting shareholders.
Yeah, that aggressive capital return strategy, particularly the opportunistic buybacks during downturns, truly speaks volumes about management's conviction in the company's intrinsic value, especially given the cyclical nature of the industry. It's a strong, tangible signal to the market that they see value.
Definitely. And what about debt?
Right. A brief point on debt management. The company primarily utilizes floor plan credit facilities. These are essential industry standard tools for financing their substantial new and used vehicle inventories. Big ticket items. Beyond that, they maintain other credit lines for general operations and to fund strategic acquisitions. The sources consistently indicate that their balance sheet is managed conservatively.
Not over-leveraged.
No, with a clear focus on maintaining a strong liquidity position and manageable leverage ratios throughout the cycle. This financial discipline is absolutely critical. It ensures they have the flexibility to continue investing in M&A, capital expenditures, and other growth initiatives, even when the industry's demanding cycles are at their lowest point, while still returning capital to shareholders. It's a very balanced and disciplined approach to financial stewardship.
Okay, now, as we always say, no investment analysis is truly complete without a thorough understanding of the risks involved. We have to look at the potential downsides. So, what are the major headwinds and potential challenges for Rush Enterprises going forward?
Every company has risks, for sure.
First, and perhaps most obvious, is cyclicality and economic sensitivity. We've deeply discussed this, but it's the big one. The company's financial results are highly sensitive to the cyclical nature of the commercial vehicle market.
Tied directly to the economy.
Directly tied to freight activity, industrial production, and the overall health of the North American economy. A prolonged or deeper economic recession than currently anticipated would significantly depress new truck sales. And while their aftermarket business is resilient, even it could experience some negative impact, albeit to a much lesser extent. They are not entirely immune to a severe, protracted downturn.
Right, the aftermarket cushions, but doesn't eliminate the cycle risk.
Second, there's a significant dependence on key OEMs. A substantial portion of Rush's revenue is derived from the sale and service of Peterbilt and International vehicles. Those dealership agreements are absolutely critical assets. As we touched on earlier, the sources highlight that these agreements contain those change of control provisions.
The family ownership clause again.
Right. This means that if the Rush family's aggregate voting power, their collective ownership stake and voting control, were to fall below a certain predetermined threshold, it could theoretically trigger a clause allowing the OEM to terminate the franchise rights.
Low probability, but high impact if it happened.
Exactly. If this were to happen, which is certainly seen as a low probability event given the family's stated commitment, it would have a material adverse effect on the business. Losing those key brands would significantly impair their operations. It's a specific and important governance risk for investors to be aware of. Third, regulatory risk looms large and creates considerable uncertainty. The industry faces significant disruption, particularly from the EPA's 2027 emission standards.
That regulatory gauntlet we talked about.
Exactly. As we've explored, these regulations are expected to mandate complex new technologies that will significantly increase the cost and complexity of new vehicles. This could fundamentally disrupt normal fleet replacement cycles and create periods of intense demand volatility as fleets react. While Rush is well positioned to service these new technologies, the very act of this regulatory shift introduces unpredictability into their core vehicle sales business for several years.
More volatility baked in for a while.
Fourth, technological disruption presents a long-term evolutionary challenge. The ongoing transition to alternative powertrains, BEV, hydrogen fuel cells, along with the potential development of autonomous trucking technology.
The really long-term future stuff.
Right. This could fundamentally alter the industry over decades. While Rush is proactively investing to service these new technologies, a rapid or wholesale shift away from the internal combustion engine could, over the long term, reduce the demand for the traditional parts and services that currently form the bedrock of their highly profitable aftermarket business.
So managing that transition is key.
It is. It's a transition they are managing, but it carries inherent long-term uncertainties for their legacy business. And finally, despite being the largest player, the market remains competitive.
They're big, but not the only game in town.
No. Rush faces robust competition from other large, well-capitalized dealer groups like Penske's Premier Truck Group, which also has significant scale and OEM relationships. In addition, there are numerous smaller independent dealers who compete intensely, especially locally or for niche services. This ongoing competition puts pressure on pricing for both new vehicle sales and aftermarket services.
Keeps them on their toes.
Meaning Rush constantly has to innovate and differentiate to maintain its market share and profitability. These are all critical factors to keep in mind when evaluating the company's future trajectory.
Okay, that's a good rundown of the risks.
Yeah.
So if we connect all this to the broader picture of how to properly value a company like Rush, given its deeply cyclical nature and those distinct, almost opposing business segments, It clearly requires a highly nuanced approach.
Yeah, you can't just slap a simple multiple on it and call it a day.
Definitely not. It goes far beyond just looking at a single simplistic number. We examine current and historical trading multiples. Rush Enterprises, ticker RUSH, traded at a price-to-earnings P.E. ratio of approximately 15.3x as of July 2025.
15.3x P.E.
Okay, but here's the crucial caveat. An examination of its historical P.E. ratio reveals significant, often dramatic, volatility. This multiple can contract to as low as 8x during cyclical troughs.
When earnings are high, but outlook is bad.
Exactly. And then expand to over 25x during periods of recovery and optimism, when current earnings might be depressed, but are expected to grow rapidly.
So the P.E. is all over the place, depending on where we are in the cycle.
Precisely. This inherent volatility truly highlights the limitations of using a P.E. ratio in isolation for a deeply cyclical business like this. A more stable, perhaps through-the-cycle view, is often provided by the enterprise value to EBITDA ratio. It's less distorted by depreciation, non-cash items, financing structure.
A cleaner look at operational cash flow valuation.
Right. As of July 2025, the company's EBITDA multiple was approximately 8.3x. This gives you a clearer, more consistent picture of its valuation relative to its core operational cash flow.
8.3x EBITDA, that seems reasonable, maybe even low for a quality business.
Well, that really prompts the important question. Given everything we've discussed about the company's unique structure, is the market truly appreciating the full value here? This is precisely where the sum of the parts, or SOTP valuation framework, becomes incredibly compelling and insightful for Rush Enterprises.
SOTP. Okay, breaking it down into pieces, why is that so useful here?
The reason it's so appropriate, so powerful for Rush, is precisely because of the fundamentally distinct economic characteristics of its primary business lines. You have the stable, high-margin aftermarket segment versus the volatile, lower-margin vehicle sales segment. These two parts of the business have vastly different risk profiles, growth trajectories, and cash flow characteristics. Therefore, from an analytical perspective, they should ideally be valued independently using different multiples.
Value the aftermarket differently than the sales side.
Exactly. We can reasonably hypothesize different multiples for each. For instance, the stable high-margin aftermarket segment, with its predictable recurring revenue, could arguably be valued more like a high-quality industrial distributor or an established auto parts retailer.
Businesses that typically get higher multiples.
Right. These types of businesses typically command higher valuation multiples, perhaps in the range of 10-12x EBITDA, or even higher, reflecting their consistent profitability and lower cyclical risk. In stark contrast, the cyclical lower-margin vehicle sales segment would likely be valued using a much lower multiple, more consistent with that of a traditional capital goods manufacturer, or a highly cyclical dealership, perhaps in the 5-7x range. The market tends to penalize pure cyclicals.
Okay, so maybe 10-12x for aftermarket, 5-7x for sales.
Something like that. And what's truly fascinating here, and what the SOTP analysis potentially reveals, is a potential valuation disconnect. The market appears to be applying a single blended multiple to the entire enterprise, that 8.3x we mentioned. that is heavily, perhaps overly influenced by the cyclicality and lower margins of the vehicle sales business.
So the volatile sales part is dragging down the valuation of the stable aftermarket part.
That's the argument. In essence, the market might be unduly penalizing the company for the inherent volatility of new truck sales, and in doing so, failing to fully value the stable, high-margin aftermarket stream. Think about it. A pure-play aftermarket services business with Rush's scale and dominant position would almost certainly command a higher valuation multiple on its own than the 8.3x EBITDA multiple at which the consolidated company currently trades.
Yeah, that makes intuitive sense.
So by assigning more appropriate distinct multiples to each segment, an SOTP valuation would likely yield an intrinsic value for the enterprise that is significantly higher than its current market valuation. This strongly suggests the market may be overlooking or significantly undervaluing the underlying quality and surprising stability of that aftermarket profit stream, focusing too much on the razor and not enough on the highly profitable blades.
A potential hidden value story. That's a powerful argument for a more granular approach to valuation. So, for you, our listener, if you're tracking Rush's performance and strategy going forward, what are the absolutely key metrics to monitor? What should you keep your eye on?
Yeah, what are the vital signs?
First, and arguably most important, is aftermarket performance. Look specifically at same-store sales growth in parts and service. That tells you about underlying organic growth. Also, track the aftermarket segment's percentage of total gross profit. Is it staying strong or growing? And most crucially, keep watching that absorption ratio.
Gotta watch the absorption ratio. It's the bedrock.
It is. These indicators are the heartbeat of their core economic engine. Second, you'll want to carefully watch vehicle sales. Track both new and used unit sales volumes, keeping an eye on their market share trends in both Class 8 and the more stable Class 4-7 segments.
See how they're doing versus the overall market.
Right. Also, monitor the gross profit per vehicle retailed. Are they maintaining pricing discipline? Third, pay close attention to operational efficiency metrics. Specifically, inventory days, outstanding how quickly they're moving inventory and working capital as a percentage of sales. These are crucial for assessing management's ability to efficiently manage their balance sheet and cash flow.
Especially with that pre-buy volatility coming.
Good point. And finally, keep a keen eye on their growth and capital allocation. Look at the frequency, size, and importantly, the integration success of their acquisitions, as this is a core component of their inorganic growth strategy. Additionally, track their consistent dividend growth and the pace and size of share repurchases. These provide direct insight into management's capital return priorities and their ongoing view of the stock's valuation.
Following the strategy and the cash flows.
Exactly. These metrics, together, will give you a comprehensive and nuanced picture of Rush Enterprises' performance and strategic direction. Well, this deep dive into Rush Enterprises has been a truly fascinating journey, hasn't it? Revealing a company that, at first glance, might seem like a straightforward industrial cyclical player.
Just another trucking-related stock.
Right, one that simply rides the waves of the trucking economy. But beneath that surface, it actually hides a powerful, incredibly resilient engine, that aftermarket piece, the kind that can not only weather economic storms, but in some cases, even thrive through them.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, the story of Rush Enterprises really challenges us, you know, challenges us to look beyond initial impressions and simplistic single metrics. It prompts us to consider how a company can build enduring value, even in a notoriously volatile industry like trucking, by strategically focusing on differentiated, higher margin services, and intelligently leveraging its scale and technological capabilities.
Yeah, it's a real case study in building resilience.
It really is. It's a masterclass in strategic positioning and resilience through diversification, focusing on where the real value lies.
So for you, our listener, here's a final provocative thought to mull over as we wrap up. In a world of increasing market volatility and accelerating technological change, how many other seemingly traditional businesses out there might be concealing a surprisingly resilient and profitable aftermarket engine that the broader market is currently overlooking?
Good question. Where else is this happening?
What industries, perhaps even obscure ones, do you think might have their own versions of razors and blades waiting to be discovered by a discerning eye? Something to think about. We hope this deep dive has given you a shortcut to being exceptionally well-informed about a truly interesting and surprisingly robust corner of the North American economy.